Alright, welcome to Press Start, game development and how to become one. I'm Adam Aritasmita, CEO of Arsanesia and Vice President Indonesia Game Association, will be your host for this episode. In this podcast, we will talk about game development and how to start your career as a game developer. We will invite experts from the game industry to tell us their game dev journey to inspire us. I hope that this podcast can help you start to be a game developer. And this podcast, of course, is brought to you by Indonesia Game Association and Goethe Institute Jakarta. And today we are having a special guest from Germany, Philip. Hi, Philip.
Hello. Nice to be here.
How are you, man?
Good. Spring started early in Germany this year, so I had the first contact with my son already this year, which always lightens the mood.
Yes, that's awesome. Are you still working from home or already go to the office in Germany?
Actually, I always work at home since my company Zeppelin Studio is based in Vienna, and we have the office in Vienna, and everyone else is in Vienna. So this is where the proper office work happens. and I'm kind of used to be digitally somewhere else. This is my working environment, you see.
And in which country or city are you right now?
In Berlin.
In Berlin. All right. That's awesome. By the way, Philip, before we start our chit-chat, could you please quick introduce yourself to us? Where are you working right now? And especially, what is your role? Because maybe a lot of people who are listening to this podcast is interested in the role in game development. And what is your responsibility on that role? Go ahead.
Okay, sure, I can. So my name, as you already heard, is Philip Schaefer, and I co-founded a small company in Vienna, Austria. So I'm the co-founder and CTO. This is what my title is saying here. In reality, what I'm doing, since we are a small team, is also a lot of development and programming. Sometimes I do some modeling. On the business side, I'm mainly doing business development. So I'm going to meetings. I'm searching for new work, since we are doing contract work as well. That kind of sums it up, I think, quite well. Might be good to mention as well that I'm always helping out the Amaze Festival, which is actually why I'm here, because the Amaze Festival connected me to Goethe, and Goethe connected me to you guys. I guess it's also kind of like doing biz dev.
Awesome. All right, so now, before we started, I like to start with a quick games. It's not a game, it's more like a rapid question. I will shoot you with a question, and you can answer with things that pop up in your mind. So there's no wrong or right answer, and no scoring, so that's trivial question. It should be fine. All right. Are you ready?
Okay,
the first question.
I don't feel ready, but let's just try it out. Go ahead.
All right, the first question. What is the last game that you play?
Team Fight Tactics.
All right. The second question. What is your favorite coding language?
C#.
C#. All right. And next, what is your favorite genre for games?
Strategy.
Awesome. And what is the most memorable thing that you remember from Indonesia?
Sadly, I need to say rain, because this was the first one that popped into my mind, because it was raining as hell when I was going back to the train station. Good food as well, of course.
Yes. To put it on context, Philip visited Bandung in 2019, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Sounds about right. Yeah, I think my phone just reminded me at the end of last year that I was there.
Yes. Yes. He visited for Indonesia Game Developer Exchange Program, and doing a workshop, right, in the conference.
Exactly. I still sure. have the small trophy right next to me here.
All right. This is the last question. Which part do you prefer? Because you're the co-founder of Indies Game Development. You do the business management as a CTO, and you also do coding as a development. Which one do you prefer? The business job or the development side?
Since I recognize that, like, people I hire, since they are mostly doing coding and they're like coders, mm-hmm. I must say they're better than me, and that kind of like gets to me to be a little bit personal. So I think right now I prefer to do biz dev because I'm unchallenged there.
All right.
But that's a subjective thing. But I think I will always also code, because it's just a nice thing to do. It's very rewarding. Which, for example, is business development. It's very vague. And coding, you do something and you have something. That's just wonderful. But to give you the straight answer, biz dev.
All right. Awesome. So with this quick question, I hope all the audience and listener can know you more personal, what you like and what you like to do. So in this podcast, in the press start, we would like to talk more about your journey, your experience, because most of the audience in this podcast is mostly someone new or someone who just want to know about the game industry, and maybe your story can inspire us to like, hey, so this is how they started, maybe I can do like that also. So for the first opening topic for our discussion for today is, do you remember when was the first time you want to become a game developer, like the trigger or like the moment, I want to make games?
I think it was at the end of high school when you're at this point, like, what will I be doing with my life? In Germany at this point, we still had a built-in, how you say, delay, since there was still civil service. But after high school, I thought it's physics or informatics. And then I kind of decided on informatics, and like doing my civil service, I kind of thought, hey, game development is a nice thing to do. Let's maybe try to go into this direction.
So when you, after you finished high school, you went to the college and you like to think, I think game development sounds cool.
No, after the high school, I went to civil service. I took care of elderly people here in Berlin. It was actually also when I left home and I moved here to Berlin, to the big city. Hey. So this was, I think, like 10 months I took care of elderly people. I had like this whole time to actually figure out what I will do afterwards. But then I actually did a big bicycling trip to, I don't know, maybe think about the world a little bit more even. And then I came back and then I studied media and informatics here in Berlin, which was actually not this good of a study. Like afterwards, I didn't feel ready for anything. So I was very sure that I need to study more to actually be able to do something. And I applied in Vienna, but it was already full. So I tried Leipzig, which is another city here in Germany. And the master studies there were as terrible as the bachelor studies in Berlin. So after 1 year, I switched to Vienna because they promised me, like, next year you can apply without doing the test and anything. And it was a very good decision. And I think what made this study so special is that it had like a proper focus. The name of the studies was Game Engineering and Simulation. So there was still some physics going on. But it was like more game studies. And next to programming, we had game design, we had modeling, we had animation. This was good. It was like really focused.
Is it the first time that you met? This is the first time that you make a game.
Yes, I mean, this was actually how we founded Zeppelin on the long run. Like, I can continue this story. During my studies in Vienna, we obviously needed to do some sort of, okay, this is your master's project. So we grouped up in small teams. And we were a team of five. We actually also had someone from another school joining us as an artist. And we did Shine, which, fun fact, like, all the teachers told us, please don't do this. It's too big and a little bit clunky. And so, but we said we want to do it. And they said, okay, if you want to fail, go ahead. And we did it like halfway through our studies. Like, we had the first couple of levels and an end boss. And afterwards, me and Michael is my co-founder, we decided, hey, we want to go on like no salary at all. Just like cost of living. That's what we had. And we asked the team, they said yes, but how it is, like, every time people sometimes say yes and then they don't do it. but I was lucky with Michael. Like, we applied to a lot of local competitions and we went to events, and then Microsoft kind of like met us and told us, like, hey, there's this Microsoft Imagine Cup Award where you get money at the end. Wow. So we applied. It was a little bit chaotic, the whole process, but we ended up in St. Petersburg for the finals and we won.
Wow.
Awesome. Which was basically our funding money. And this was the point where I said, okay, Michael, we still do this cost of living, like, small thing. Let us apply for funding in Austria since we now have this crazy award. So we got some additional funding from Austria, which allowed us to actually pay other people a little bit. And that's how we finished Shine at the end, which was our first game. So it was, game from university enlarged, or like
the
good way. But I can really recommend, like, this starting locally, getting into the dev community. It is also like a lot of connection we still have, and a lot of contract work we are still using is actually from this time where we're going to, like, small events. Hey, we have this little game. We are, like, two shy students. Can you help us?
Is it the same game that you make where your lecturer said, this is going to fail? Is it the same game that win the Imagine Cup?
Yes.
And then did you bring back the toffee to your lecturer? Like, hey.
No. You are not rubbing it in their faces. But I think they know what they did.
All right. That's awesome. Imagine Cup, I think it's a global competition, right? Anywhere in the world, you can apply for it, right?
Exactly. And they go through great lengths to get everyone from everywhere to the location. They're taking care of your visa if they need to help there and stuff like this. It's great. I actually don't know if it's still alive. Like, actually, the studies, the game engineering and simulation, it just died last year. I don't know why they are not continuing it, because it was very special. Because here, most of the time, you need to pay hefty if you want to study something with game. Like, we have those private schools. And if you finish those, then, we have a lot of debt, or we had a lot of money to begin with. So for me, this was not an option. And it was actually, I was looking around, more or less, like, the only public school, university teaching something with games, which is sad.
That's interesting. So
it changed, but
So when you looking for a study about games, most of it is from the private, and this one the only public that you can find.
Yes, as far as I know right now, there are like two public schools now also in Berlin offering something for games, but yes. And in comparison, like, I'm talking a lot, like, I was talking before Corona a lot with other students, like, getting fresh into the market. In my point of view, people on private schools don't have the better education. Like maybe they have, but then it's a teacher thing. But it's also for us at the public school, we had a lot of teachers like from the industry. And I had a better education than other people here in the private sector. But so like that the school is private doesn't make it better, I think is my point. And you should look around and listen and maybe search people who actually studied there and ask them how they felt. Could be a good approach. Like I didn't do it, to be honest. So I was just lucky. But now looking back and how I should have chosen my studies, like maybe that's a nice trick to use.
I see. That's really interesting, Philip, because right now we are in the association is trying to create like, I'm not sure, is it curriculum or is it like study or courses that this is like the kind of skill of the kind of course that you need to do in your study in class to the university to be able to make a good game developer. Now, my question is, what makes the study that you mentioned, game engineering and simulation, it's good and can prepare you for become a better game development than other studies so we can maybe learn from it and adapt from it?
It had a heavy focus on programming. So I would say it was more or less like a programming studies, but you had every aspect of game development at some point in your studies. If it's just one course, it's enough. Like at some point, you were forced to do sound. Like you are working with FMOD. FMOD is a kind of like an audio engine that's where you can like in the game tell the audio engine now it's very dramatic and then the music changes depending on this event. So we had audio, we had art, like modeling and animation, we had game designs, like the whole spectrum. We also had business and team management. And in the end, you go out and you know every aspect of game development. And even if you then just be a developer, it will be more easy to work with you because you understand the other departments at least a little bit. And you also know, for example, if you would be an artist in this regard, what the programmer needs. So there's like a fundamental understanding of all the departments, which I think is very important. And for me, of course, it was important because I'm kind of like started off as an indie and now it's like small company. Then you need to do all of those things to actually have like a working game.
Sure. Yeah, that's correct.
So it's then not just knowledge, it's actually knowledge I put to use.
How long is the program? I mean, is it 1 year, 2 years, 3 years?
This, let me lie, was 2 years. Two years.
That's interesting because usually bachelor is 4 years. Imagine what
this
can
was master's
happen.
Degree.
Yeah, this is master, right?
Yeah, it's master.
Imagine what would happen if that 2 years is become 4 years and more comprehensive. What kind of talent that you can create, right?
Yes, this would be awesome.
How about the lecturer? Do they from the industry or they are more has experience? Because in our case, like most of the lecturer is not from the industry, so they don't keep up with the trend on the needs of the industry. How about the lecturer there?
So in Vienna, I think everyone was from the industry, which was amazing. I don't know how they pulled it off, because I would really prefer people from the industry if you have like a hands-on studies. If you say like university, and you have this, I'm in the 7-7 and I'm looking down on the earth, then something other could work. But I was always going for, I want to study something where I can build and construct afterwards. So they were all from the industry. And before in Berlin and in Leipzig, I think nobody was from the industry. Which doesn't need to be a problem, but it is a problem if, like, the people don't keep up and they, for example, I think Talk Engine or something, like, nobody actually uses today anymore, and he just printed out tutorials, and I was sitting there and thinking, okay, I can do this tutorial on my own at home, and because he was also like, if you had a question, it's like, I need to look, like, okay, I can look for my, never mind, like, see, this was making me a little bit angry, because I was sitting there, and I had a feeling, I'm losing time of my life here.
All right. I think. Continue.
You can actually, I think, easily avoid this problem if you or someone from the industry at least, like, tells the teachers, like, this is what we use right now. Please look into those technologies, and then it's at least up to date. And if the teacher, like, really gets into it and then knows this Unity or Unreal, then everything is there. Like, you don't mandatorily need someone from the industry. But I would say it's better also for the connections and. Like you would say, like, the war stories those people can tell you.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think I need to follow up with you in all sorts of the podcast, because this is something that we're trying to do, and maybe, I don't know, maybe Gute also can help to how we can, I'm not sure, maybe ask the university in Indonesia, which have a concern in game development area, that can learn from in Germany, maybe, or Vienna, maybe, if you still have connection with the lecturer, or you have, like, the information about the curriculum, what should they need, something like that, to update them. I think that would be great outside of the podcast.
Sure. I mean, I can send you, like, my degree, like, everything is listed there, what I did. Could be right. Already some sort of help.
That's awesome. Okay, now get back to you. So after you graduate and you won the Imagine Cup, you started your own company, right? I want to know about the journey when you run your company. And from what I heard, and when we last met 2 years ago, when you tell me you worked a lot in more like serious gaming, gamification, do something like that. Is that something that already been, hey, this is the cool area that I want to work with? Or you also have like, someday I want to make my own IP in entertainment games, or which direction do you go with your company?
Okay. So when we finished Shine, we actually were kind of like, okay, sales numbers are not as good. Like, what are we doing here? It was a mistake to do it without like any publisher. Like, we had a publisher then afterwards. But we are kind of like, to say it like this, like in a hole, like, okay, now I'm here. What now? Like, we were not thinking it through, it seems. Like, I know we didn't. We were just like keen, like, hey, first title, let's be there. But then, like, I did a nice travel to China and kind of like recalibrating. And it was just like, we couldn't do with the money we had, like, another own IP. So we needed to do something to get like some new work on board. And because funding also just pays half and stuff like this, we came up with the idea to actually approach the industry with small games, like marketing games, or a game that actually teaches you what public transport is all about. So we made a couple of drafts for like three of those games and started to walk around and go to companies. But fun fact, none of them worked actually, because expectations were quite weird and we were just like this new studio. But Shine helped us in this regard, but because then someone from Germany actually came to us like, hey, I have like this big energy company here and I want to sell them a game and I have the money. Let's do this. So again, lucky someone else approached us and this was like our first contract work. And then you slowly get into a rotation. Like afterwards, China approached us for the porting for our first game. It was the Fuse console then. Like we ported China to the Fuse, which died immediately afterwards, like the console, not the game. Yeah. But we got the money. And then I was here in Berlin and then I recognized like, this small network is really important. I built up over the years, like I was going to events and I met this guy and this guy and this guy and this guy. And suddenly, like after 2 years, those connections finally worked. Like more people were approaching us and we formed partnerships. So we have a lot of work with other companies. Where it's basically the two of us always, and someone brings in the work, and then we handle it together. So kind of like shared network of contract work income. But then the tricky part is actually to get back, because yes, we still want to do our own game. So now this works. You hire new people. You have a company, hopefully some money on your bank account. Right now, what we're doing is actually trying to push for our own game again, which is most of the time in the beginning, just like make yourself free time in your work time where you can work on your game ideas. And we do it for everyone. Like we have game jams and then we have meetings where we decide on nice ideas and then everyone can decide who should work further on his idea to make it an actual concept. And that's like the process we are in right now. And I think all in all, it's maybe 1 day a week where we like slowly ramp up. Excuse me. And at some point, of course, we will also try to get external money on this project. But yeah, it's hard. You just need to decide, okay, this is now the time and nobody can take it away, because contract work always has a deadline and people have problems. It's like, fix this, fix this. And then you need to go, no, this will be fixed on Monday because today I'm working on my own game. I mean, that's not something you say to the client, but that's something you need to say to yourself, because if you don't do it, then you will just do contract work for the rest of your life, which isn't bad per se. Like, it's nice, but it's not as rewarding. And it's like the internal motivation is like far more greater on your own game.
Sure. The interesting part is like you mentioned from the connection. Is it easy for you to pitch to the company who is not what kind of client are you working? Is it from the game industry or from not? But based on what you mentioned, it's from like the energy, it's from like the other side from game. Is it easy for you to convince them, hey, you can use game or gamification or serious game to help your business? Do they already educated about that?
It's slowly growing. Like there is a big conference in Germany where it's all about education. And they also have like a small gaming corner. Which is like growing with every year. And last year it was already like half of one big hall. So this is actually like nice hunting grounds, because people then already like know and they are there and they know that like gamification and storytelling and feeling, helps, to like educate people and train people. For example, if, like those are good grounds. And then you have like all those events and you connect to other people and you're then like in a bubble where it's easy. What's not working in my experience is like what we did in the beginning, right, of the Shine, just going to someone and then you don't need to convince him that your game is good. You also need to convince him that, like, gaming per se is a good way to transport informations and, like, excite people. And so then you have two missions, and it's just, like, very hard to succeed at both. And you need to, like, have a check mark on the first one, but then you still need to have the check mark on your game idea. And then maybe you lose them on the price because they don't know how much a game costs.
Yes,
absolutely. So this is just terrible. I mean, it could be a nice hobby to do it, but the outcome is just so unsure. In my experience, I'm not this good of a salesperson.
What is the name of the conference that you mentioned before? The one when you educate about various games?
I think it's EduTech.
Ah, all right.
I should know because I was there already 3 times. it looks wrong. It's something with Edu, and it's always like it's like all those game conferences with something game in the title. It's just doesn't stick if it's not like longer and so I can look it up for you afterwards.
Yeah. All right.
I'm sorry.
The thing that I also want to ask you is I'm not sure is it normal in Germany or only a small portion of it like you, but usually like in Indonesia, most of the game developers is usually don't go out really often. They only in their studios working on their game. Maybe it's hard for them to go outside and not working. Maybe they're kind of introvert or shy. From what I heard from you, you really jump from one event from the other event, building connection, and that's something that help you build the connection for you also get to know others and get works from that. All right. So my question is like, how important is networking for new game developers or studios, and how is the way to build connection? Is it I need to come to every conference? I need to get to know everyone, and how do you do that?
Okay. One question after another. First, yes, I think it is important because like a lot of studios also in Germany, they don't do it. And then what normally happens is they have like one title and then they're dead. And then maybe they found something new or they apply for public funding. But then it's always like this hop, hop, hop. But I mean, it doesn't need to be like on conferences and in person. I think everyone has like his own style, how he can approach people. For me, it is, to be honest, parties and like social gatherings, like in pubs. This is where I feel home. I don't know if this is a problem I should address with myself, but anyhow, there are other ways. A friend of mine, he's more in this like whole museum kind of thing. He is going to like small like work groups with museums, and he is like he does paper, like he's doing like, okay, this is my thoughts about this topic. And then he releases his thoughts. He's going to like a radio broadcast because for some reason he likes radio. So he's going this whole like sophisticated way. And another one, maybe also a good example here in Berlin, who was really lucky. He was just hanging out online. I mean, online is still always also a good platform to just approach people. And he became the composer of Minecraft because he was hanging out on Reddit. And I think this is, like, don't force yourself to do exactly like this event thing. Maybe think about, okay, well, what are the social channels where I feel comfortable? And then use those. Like, you don't need to be on every party.
Yeah, that's a very good insight, because on most of the people's minds, when they heard about you need to go out, you need to network, you need to connect to people, what they think is like, I need to go to the event conference and then do something like that. But you mentioned about publishing your paper, doing something online. It also works. Nice.
I mean, Another way could be to just find someone who is bringing you work. So you can, this is also something you can outsource, just as an additional point. I mean, it's not as good because someone outsourced is not like the company, but still, it's also a valid approach.
Yes, that's great. By the way, in the beginning, you mentioned about the Amaze Berlin, right?
Yes.
I think that's a very cool event. Maybe can you share about it a little bit to the audience? What is Amaze Berlin and what makes it so special?
Okay. What makes it so special is that Amaze is not a typical game developer event. We're more trying to get also like people outside the gaming industry into gaming, like maybe artists who did like a playful installation and they are actually not aware that this is maybe a game. Like there are a lot of games at the Amaze where you might want to discuss if this is an actual game. But it makes like for a nice crowd and a very lively environment. And yeah, there's a strong focus on also like the artistic and party side of the whole thing. And most of the talks are from people who are developing on their own or have some sort of special character. And so the presentations are not this straight line bullet points, this is my information. Some of them are events on their own, like maybe it's just music playing or something. So you never know really what to expect. Like it's a chaotic punk world of game development, which is a sector you don't see this often. Maybe that explains it a little bit. What makes it even more special, it's a very important point, is that it's very international. I think we are the like most international event from our audience, at least I know of, because of all the connection, the indie devs, like most of them, they travel from there to there. And so they have kind of like their whole little collectives all over the world. And DMA's Berlin somehow became like the one event in the year where everyone from around the world basically comes together in one spot. And then they tell each other like, hey, I'm now living there and I'm living there. Kind of Christmas for game developers. I don't know how to put it. But it's not only Amaze Berlin. We also had Amaze Johannesburg. Which sadly is not there anymore.
Because of COVID?
Because of money, as always. Oh. it was a little bit funded first in Joburg by, I think it was called Fakugesi, but I'm not so much in the money side of the maze. Mm-hmm. And they cut the funding because they needed it for something else. And then we moved to Cape Town for 1 year because, don't know, if do you know Free Lives? The guys who did ProForce?
No.
Okay. They made a lot of money and they're kind of keen about Amaze. So they were helping out. So then we had like 1 year more Amaze in South Africa. But then somehow it just faded away. And now there's Corona, so there is Amaze Digital, which is just not the same, but I was still surprised how could it actually work.
Yeah, because I have visited Germany twice. Once is one for like just a visit, not in the Amaze timeline, and one is for the Gamescom. And each time I talk about the event with the game developer from Germany, they always mention Amaze, then how cool is Amaze for indie game developers. Actually, last year we and Gute create like a hackathon for games using like a cultural things archive. And the winner for the hackathon is planned to go to the MS festival the next year, right? So we already very excited, like to prepare everything, and then COVID hit, and we cannot go there to bed. But I really, really like to see how MS works. The vibe is so cool, they say.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. The whole traveling thing. I don't know if you did it, but as for me, kind of biz dev, like I said before, it was like pubs and events. Since COVID is basically dead for me, like it's still working. We have like nice partners. We also, which I didn't mention before, when we founded the office in Vienna, like the local space, we decided to move one floor above another company called Mipumi. So we have with them, for example, also this shared relationship where they give us work, we give them also a little work because they are way bigger than we are. that was also a smart move, just to say it. It worked out at the end. Like, then you can share a workload, which is really important.
Sure. Yeah, that's great. That's something that can be also followed by game developers in Indonesia also, right? When you want to try something new, you can try with learning from the bigger company.
Exactly. And also kind of this indie collective thing we also have here in Berlin called Saftladen, where just like all the small like one or two, three people companies, they all moved together into like basically one big flat. And it seems this works out also quite well. Like you inspire each other, you have like this nice input, you can always talk about your ideas with other people, which is really important, especially in the beginning, because you have your idea, then you make your concept, but you are like really focused and at some point you don't see the problems anymore, as with everything you work too long on. So like external input is really important. For us, it was like small events. For them, it's then just easy. Like you take a coffee and then you talk with someone else like, hey, this is my idea. What do you think?
Yes. I visited there once and it's quite nice to see a lot of game developers indie in one office.
Yeah. I mean, this shared flat kind of is like, but I'm way too much like, since studies, I worked in my own room. Like I'm used to be with myself and then just like click people into my room. So it's very like I can't imagine working like this anymore because like, I need my space now. I'm so used to it.
Yeah, but it's interesting. By the way, Philip, usually when not only students but people who want to create their own company, they usually like from the programming side or studies, they know how to code, or maybe from the art side, they know how to draw, and they team up to become indie studios. But usually they didn't learn in their college, like either in computer science or the art department, how to do business, how to run a company, how to network, how to develop their studios. Where did you learn the thing that you do as a business developer? Is you learn it from your master when you mentioned about in the game engineering and simulation, or there's another place where you can learn that?
I'm thinking about if I, especially biz dev, is something I learned trial by fire. And what really helped is that, like, it's not just me. It's also like co-founder. I also have Michael, so you can always like ping pong, and it does not all depend on you all of a sudden. Like you are like your troubles are shared with someone else. And you're both into this journey. And as you maybe heard in my story, like there was a lot of struggling going on and kind of like finding out how it goes. And then you need to be lucky at some key points and then it works. But of course, it would have been better to be, to be more prepared and, we didn't have it, and I don't know where you could learn it. I think you could learn it if you, on events, I could have asked people like, how you do you do it? But you don't, if you don't know that this is a question you should ask, then of course you don't ask it and you just talk games and it's also good. But I think there should be, like, if you do a curriculum, there should be at least like one section where people are poked, like, okay, this is important, and maybe think about the profile of your company and how will you get new contracts, and those are the ways to actually like get money, because sadly it's a lot about like money, because you need to pay your flat and your food. And that's like the key point. And if this works, you can live your happy game developer life. But this is just crucial, as sad as it is.
Yes. You said, you mentioned you learn it by doing a series of failure, and then you learn it again, learn a new thing. Can you recall, like, maybe there is some of my failure in the past that really inspired me to grow, and what's the lesson learned from them?
I remember a lot also of applying for funding. And then you have those judges in front of you, and you're basically presenting your game. And all I did was actually like, I prepare for a good presentation and then everything will work out. But I didn't think about, okay, what are maybe the problems, like focusing on problems, and also what are those judges all about? Because especially public funding, not everyone is a gamer. So I should have also prepared like some notes in my presentation to actually explain things in more detail, because I was like, from my high level years of experience, kind of thingy coming down. So they didn't understand everything. And this was a problem. Like I didn't think about the audience I'm talking to. This was actually, like right now in my mind, I'm playing this. After Shine, we also tried to place another game called Wonderland, which is also an adventure fantasy kind of tale, but with a focus on the kids side this time. And this is what we pitched. And we failed because, we just didn't think about the audience. And also what I, for example, didn't expect, that they were like, do you have children? And we both don't have children. It's like, okay, but you want to make a game for kids. Okay. I see where you are hinting. Yes. I think this was, for example, one of the key points. I think where I was just like, okay, we are not getting this. And I think we can make nice games for kids, because there's a kid in every one of us, especially if you want to become a game developer. But at this point, I was just okay. I don't know what to answer, and that's a problem.
Yeah. I see. That's very cool. Hey, Philip, time flies by. I cannot lose track. It's almost an hour already we talk together, so it almost ran out. I still have a lot of questions actually for you, but I think this is going to be my last question, because we need to wrap it out. So for all the listeners right now who want to jump into the industry, would you share maybe some tips or trick for them, that maybe from your experience, what they should do or shouldn't do?
If you want to apply somewhere, then I can just say, like, the portfolio counts very much. Also, if I talk with other CEOs, so please take care of your portfolio. And like everywhere, it's better to have like less but more quality products, and not a lot of things that are not so good in quality, which also basically counts for every department. Maybe more for the people who want to like start their own company and do like the whole indie thing. then it's really important to always stay healthy, but it's a general life advice. But this is also something where I at some point, like, there are those so many bugs, and then like we release, and there's so much pressure, and you don't have any life next to it. And then you start, like, your work just gets shitty and shitty. And it's something I'm still learning, like, forcing myself to actually, like, quit at some point and say, okay, now I need to do free time. Because I know, like, next morning when I slept well and I relax a little bit, I will solve this problem maybe in 5 minutes. And now I will need 2 hours because I'm already really exhausted. And yes, like, getting to know other people who work in the industry is, for me, is very important. And I think for everyone else as well. Also, if you want to work somewhere, then it's good maybe to know in beforehand how it actually is there and who else is working there and what are they doing. And those are informations, like, if there's a local game developer meetup or something, maybe go there or look around in the internet. Maybe there's a Discord channel of your local community. If not, maybe you are the person who started.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you very much, Philip, for this amazing discussion for today. That's it for today. I hope the session can give you all the listener insight and courage to press start your career as a game developer. I am Adam Adisa Smita. Keep playing games, start making games. Bye, Philip. Thank you so much.
Bye. Thank you.